Anthony Delier. I represent Christopher Davis. May it please the court. At its essence, due process is fairness. And Mr. Davis wonders how it is fair to give the government a bite at an apple that they cannot reach without a lower standard of proof and expanded admissibility of evidence.
Were you here for the first argument with Mr. Coffey?
No, ma'am.
When he was talking about incantations of the Seventh Circuit? And meaning our different, you know, the case law here, you have a really huge hurdle because you have the Supreme Court to deal with.
I understand it's a place marker argument, Your Honor.
And we know you're trying to preserve the record.
Right. And in this particular case, the defendant was stopped after a high-speed chase, a weapon was found, and he was found in possession of several small gym packs of heroin. But the government, realizing that it could not meet its burden of proof, did not charge him with possession with intent of heroin. They left that for the court to take care of later on at this lower standard. 3553A requires sentences to promote respect for the law. But I'm convinced that this sort of sentencing scheme does not promote respect for the law.
You think your client will be upset by this and will continue a life of crime because he's no longer has any feeling of decency toward the law?
Actually, Judge, I'm glad you asked that question. I'm kind of an unusual position to answer that. I'm one of the few people that practiced before you that actually spent time in a federal prison. And I can tell you that what will happen in this case and lots of them like it, so Mr. Davis is never going to have that epiphany where he says, you know, I did it, I got caught, and I'm doing my time.
He's going to spend his... We're anticipating epiphanies on the part of the people being prosecuted for crime. We're wasting our time in the beginning.
I'm not so sure that that's true, Judge, because there are a lot of people that come to the realization that I am here because of what I did, and I need to change my life.
I realize what you're saying. I sympathize with your point of view. I have had people before me on other occasions that have tried cases against lawyers who were in federal penitentiaries. And I never held that against them, but I didn't think it was a mark of favor either.
I understand that, Your Honor, but the point that I'm trying to make is people like Mr. Davis spend their entire incarceration complaining about how unfair the system is instead of examining the fact that they themselves put themselves into the system. In United States v. Osifki, I'm going to spell that for the clerks, O-F-C-K-Y 237 F-3rd 904 at 908, this court actually recognized and debated whether the standard of proof is appropriate in cases where the tail is essentially wagging the dog. That was a conversation that the court has had on more than one occasion. And there's a good reason for that, because it is problematic. And the reason why it's so problematic, even after Reuter, after U.S. v. Reuter 463rd, F3rd, 792 at 793, where this court said Booker has essentially rendered this discussion academic, I have to disagree with that, because what happens in the Western District of Wisconsin is probation and parole puts together a pre-sentence report. And it's almost like the list price on a car, because they put all the options of the case on the sales price for the vehicle, and then they hand it to the judge, and then we have to go and essentially fight about the price of the case. So all of these factors, while they may not be mandatory, they're still involved in the cost of the case. They're still part of the equation about how much is that case worth. The problem is probation and parole and eventually the courts, as a failure of defense attorneys, really, and clients, have this idea of what vehicle options there may be in this case, you know, what the case is all about. But the defendants can't fight about these options, can't fight about all of these things because they lose acceptance of responsibility. So they're put in this position where, you know, I'm guilty of having a gun. I'm guilty of the high-speed chase. I did all that. But I wasn't going to sell that heroin. In this particular case, there's a bad fact in that the pre-sentence report says, well, he said he only used heroin a couple times that month. The truth of the matter is you know, he was a stone-cold junkie, and we could have come into court, and we could have called witnesses, and we could have fought about that. And chances are we would have lost, and he would have had an even longer sentence. This isn't the worst case before this court. There have been other cases, U.S. v. Esley, 49 F3rd, 813 at 824. You know, the offense was 57 to 71 months, with the enhancements 292 to 360 months. And in that case, the court admonished the prosecutor, saying, we've told you over and over again, don't charge the petty offense and then come in and enhance these sentences like this. It's not wrong. But then this court went on to find that that sentence was reasonable. It's worrisome to me. It's worrisome to Mr. Davis. And I hope that it's worrisome to this court that people aren't going to see 3553 is being followed. These are not promoting respect for the law when somebody can be convicted of a relatively minor offense and end up spending literally decades in prison longer. And this isn't just for Mr. Davis and what is arguably a pretty easy case for this court, because he could have been acquitted. He could have been had these dismissed. And U.S. v. Crowledge, 201 F3rd 900 at 908, says that's okay. We can consider all that. Think about the balance here. If 3553A means that sentences need to promote respect for the law, how then would anyone respect a sentence that included conduct for which the person was never charged or perhaps even acquitted? Thank you.
Mr. Reinhart.
Good afternoon. David Reinhart for the United States from the Western District of Wisconsin. As mentioned, this court has previously squarely rejected this defendant's arguments. Booker forecloses his argument. Judicial fact-finding at sentencing under a preponderance of the evidence standard is constitutional as long as the guidelines are advisory, applied in a advisory manner, and the sentence is based on the 3553A factors. And in this case, all of those things were done. The district court made it clear that it was considering the advisory guideline range and the 3553A factors. Just to talk about one of the arguments by the defendant who indicated that in this particular case there may not have been a fair sentence, I think when you look at the factors in this particular case, a 102-month sentence was reasonable. Specifically, there was a loaded firearm, which this defendant, a felon, had possessed. He had seven bags of heroin on him, and he almost ran over an officer after being stopped. So I think when you look at an overall fairness argument, certainly in this particular...
He also raced away during rush hour, did they?
That's correct. So when you...
So as you can see, we've read the briefs.
Right. When you look at all the factors, I think really this was a fair sentence, and it does promote respect for the law. As far as any challenge to the factual challenge to the enhancement, that was not raised in his opening brief, so that sort of argument would be waived. I don't have any further questions, or I have any further comment. If the court doesn't have any further questions, I would ask that you affirm the district court.
Okay. Thank you. Anything further?
The factors evolve over time. I came here a couple of years ago over and over again, 3553A. You know, we kept saying it has to be the minimum sentence. There's the parsimony provision, and eventually the courts listened. And I am hopeful that the court will also consider this as just a basic fairness.
Yeah, but as long as we talk about how the guidelines are formulated in a case like this, but 102-month sentence, given the kind of sentences we see, 262 months for somebody who I don't think is as bad of stuff as this guy did. Got a felon with a loaded gun, stopped by the police, takes off when the police indicate they're going to search the van, in rush hour, a lot of traffic, runs away, throws the weapon away, and has heroin in the car. And he has a felony record. 102 months for all that?
Substantively, I believe that
the court is... That's not too bad to me.
Substantively, I believe the court is correct. What I'm concerned about is the procedure by which we get there. To label the guidelines advisory in the Western District of Wisconsin is almost amusing at this point. And
I will tell Judge Crabb that that counsel thinks that these guidelines are kind of amusing how they're formulated.
Judge Crabb is well aware of the fact that I have deep concerns about how she uses the guidelines, Your Honor. The essential point that I wanted to put before this court is not the substantive reasonableness of the sentence, because I think that 102 months probably is not, but the procedure by which we get there. It seems to me that it's not unfair to give people the notice of the crimes that they've committed and how that sentence is going to be reached. To change it to a label essentially allows the government to avoid the Sixth Amendment problem without changing the way that the result is reached.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you for accepting the appointment and vigorously representing your client. The case is taken under advisement.